Sounds like weather that's not so great for camping here in the last half of what's spring break for many people. So why not take a little day trip to Harrington, Washington, to the Harrington Opera House? And a good focus for that would be tomorrow night when they're presenting a concert with the cellist, Kevin Hekmatpana, certainly someone we know from around here, and the pianist, Darian Manica, whom we'll get to know in a little bit. Right now, let's get to know them musically as we go to our studio and hear the second movement of the Prokofiev cello and piano sonata.
Thank you.
From our studio, that was the second movement of the Sonata for Cello and Piano by Prokofiev, Kevin Hakmatpana, the cellist, and Dorian Manica, the pianist, in that performance that we were just able to enjoy. Part of an all-Russian concert, Prokofiev, Shostakovich, and Stravinsky, that's going to be taking place tomorrow night at the Harrington Opera House, and we'll get a chance to find out about the Harrington Opera House, how to get there, as well as these musicians and this concert. So let's begin the person we know. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Vern. And,
so an all-Russian concert is, how long had you planned that?
How long have we planned? You know, we've been talking about it for quite some time, and we kind of went back and forth between different programs. And, you know, in some ways, there's a danger of doing all, you know, composers from sort of the same time period and the same, basic Russian, you know, cut of stone. But those three pieces are so different and they're so unique to the cello repertoire that it's in a way very interesting to have, you know, a side-by-side comparison of sort of three contemporary Russians that are, you know, they're the same, but they're different. They're kind of frenemies, and
and so you've been planning this for a few months. Anyway.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a long time, and then we've, you know, been working on it or getting ready for the performance.
So you didn't do it just because Putin wanted it.
that's a happy happenstance.
Okay, there you go. The cellist is doing it, and we certainly know you for the many many things musically you do around here, including. You simply love to make music.
I love it all.
You can't help it.
I love it all. Yeah. I love the variety. Yeah.
Well, let's meet your pianist, Dorian Manica. Hello, Dorian.
Good morning.
What's your history with Kevin?
Oh, Kevin and I met a long time ago. I was in my undergraduate, and Kevin was a professor out in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I would have been in my early 20s at that time, and we've just been lifelong friends. We've done a number of concerts and music making together over the years, but I live now in the Denver area. In Colorado, so it's harder to get together, but we try to do this every few years, yeah. I guess we've done, yeah. on average, and I'm sure we'll continue. It's a lot of fun.
And it's really great to have a focus for yourself.
And it's amazing to have spent so many, you know, now decades as friends, and to be able to come together and play music like this is wonderful.
Now, are these new pieces, I assume, Kevin, that you will get back to your history with these. Are these new pieces for you, Dorian?
They are new for me.
All three of them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's right.
And what about you, Kevin?
You know, these are pieces that when I learned them, I learned them very thoroughly and very carefully. And then, you know, you sort of have a run of it. You play it for the season, and then you put it to bed for a while, and then you bring it back. And so the Stravinsky is probably the piece that I've played the most frequently over the years. The Prokofiev is a piece that I played maybe 15 years ago, but I haven't played it since then. And the Shostakovich, I played that, you know, when I was in college. But, you know, I've taught it a lot, but it, you know, kind of looking back at my, schedule, I haven't performed that, you know, since then. So.
And Shostakovich is a piece, it's my experience, that young musicians that have the ability to play the notes, to play it, really take to something like Shostakovich,
that's right.
Don't they?
It's well written for the cello. It's very accessible for the audience. But it's deceptive in how, you know, superficially you might think it's simple to pull off. It's very straightforward and, you know, it's well written for the cello. But it's a quite deep piece, and it's an earlier work of his, but he's mature beyond his years when he wrote that.
There's pairs of composers that we lump together, Debussy, Ravel, Schumann, Schubert, and in a certain way, Prokofiev, Shostakovich, and neither of them would probably like us saying that.
That's right.
But let's just launch into a discussion of Shostakovich and Prokofiev, their similarities and their differences from either of you.
Well, pianistically, I can speak from my side that they're very different. Where Prokofiev was a very refined and skilled and artful pianist, as a performer himself, Shostakovich was less so. There are recordings of Shostakovich playing, but his piano writing is very quirky. It does not feel like it comes from the mind of a pianist, and where Prokofiev does. So it fits. Prokofiev fits in the hands beautifully. It feels well, where Shostakovich doesn't always. So from a performer's perspective, they feel very different, even though their musical language is relatively similar, at least in the grand scheme of composers and music.
Sure. And Kevin?
For me, I seem to find that, you know, both Shostakovich and Prokofiev were very artist-driven. You know, they wrote it with a particular performer in mind. And the Shostakovich was written for a cellist of the day named Viktor Kubatsky, who was, you know, famous in his day, taught at the Moscow Conservatory, you know, had a sort of robust tone, you know. And the Prokofiev was, of course, written for Rostropovich, and the piano part written for Richter. And, you know, Rostropovich's fingerprints are all over that sonata. I mean, it just, you know, the warmth of tone, the generosity of spirit, the crazy technical flashy things that Rostropovich was famous for. You know, you compare, you were talking about Ravel and Debussy. I think of Shostakovich closer to the Debussy model and Ravel closer to the Prokofiev model. Mm-hmm. You know, the tricks, the fantastic colors and effects, and he was just amazing at that. There's a certain sarcasm, there's a certain, twinkle in the eye. The Shostakovich is a darker work. It's got some real depth. That third movement is pretty dark, and it's very introverted. There are some moments of sarcasm. There are some moments of quirky effects, but that's not the point of the piece.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that Prokofiev was written significantly before the Shostakovich,
it was one of the last works he wrote.
Oh, okay, so Prokofiev, early Shostakovich.
That's right.
So therefore, they're fairly contemporary pieces, even though the composers aren't quite
right.
that as contemporary as
that's
we
right.
as we make them out to
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the wild card, and probably Stravinsky. Well, he wrote a piece called Card Games. He'd probably love to be thought of as the wild card. The Suite Italienne has kind of a long, strange history, doesn't it?
Yes, that was written during his neoclassical period. And, you know, he got in such trouble during, you know, for the Rite of Spring, and that's a very famous story. And just about the time that he, you know, the public was kind of warming up to that, he changed his stripes and went into a totally different direction. And the public didn't really care for that. They were like, you know, why did you change? We liked that. And it originally started as the Pulcinella Suite for orchestra, and then he made an arrangement called Suite Italienne for violin and piano. He wrote it for the violinist Samuel Dushkin, and Piatigorsky, great Russian cellist, sort of, you know, twisted Stravinsky's arm to get him to do a cello version. Mm-hmm. So that's the genesis of that piece. And the version for violin and cello is just not a straight copy. There are some movements in one and not the other. And it's, you know, the piano writing has also been amended for the cello version.
And so talk about the piano writing of Stravinsky and playing Stravinsky, Darian.
Yeah, so he didn't write that much for piano. And so the most famous by far would be the three movements from the Petrushka, mm-hmm. which is a really percussive and rhythmic mm-hmm. piece. And that is a signature writing of his for piano. So especially in the last movement of the Suite Italienne, it feels a lot like the movements of the Petrushka. Very percussive, very rhythmic. It's a quirky nature to the writing, again, similar maybe to Shostakovich in the sense that it's quirky. It doesn't feel as pianistic as we already mentioned Prokofiev, but then even the great piano composers such as Chopin or Liszt, where you really know when you're coming from the mind of a pianist. In the case of Stravinsky, you feel sort of an orchestral rhythmic quality to the piano mm-hmm. writing. But it's really rewarding to play. It takes a little while to get your head around it and your hands into it. And once that happens, has a really rewarding quality to it. So I really appreciate that. And there's a lot of great interplay between the cello and the piano throughout the piece. So where something comes through first, maybe in the cello or first in the piano, and then you have an opportunity to echo that or to lead that back and forth. There's just a great quality. It's very kind of playful in that mm-hmm. sense, which is fun.
Darian Manica, the pianist who's playing this concert, and Kevin Heckmatpana, the cellist. And this concert is at the Harrington Opera House, and Billy Heron, who's the president of the Harrington Opera House Association, is with us. Well, welcome back, Billy.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
Let's do the quick recap on the history of the Heron Opera House. You don't quite own it that much. The Harrington Opera House, both for the last 25 years and before.
Well, the building was built in 1904. And it was active in the community. It was a cultural center for the area until about the time of the war. And then it kind of got into disrepair, and some have felt that it was condemned. But in 1991, there was a lady that moved to town, and with the encouragement of Verda Miller and Margaretta Scott, who were local ladies, they were able to acquire the building after having it inspected to see if it was viable to restore it. And we purchased it for $1 from the owner with the idea that he could have a life estate. He was the local attorney for the town. Anyway, fast forward, we became a nonprofit in 1992, and we are celebrating our 25th anniversary this fall. And we've been able to restore the building. There's still some work to do. But
There's always work to do.
But the first meeting we had a long list of things that had to be done. And, of course, the first was to secure the roof. But at the very bottom of the list was we knew we had to have an elevator and a grand piano. And this year, we accomplished that. Mm. We have our elevator, and we have a beautiful 7-foot Boston designed by Steinway piano, which we're excited to hear Darian play. Sure. We've had all of our ups and downs, but we have a very, very strong support group, a strong community support group, and we're able to bring in events now that is so special to a little town, and we're finding we're drawing from about 100-mile radius people coming into our events. And along with not only being a performing center, we have a teacher. She has 2 master's degrees in teaching, and she has students that she teaches piano, and then we have a retired educator that teaches art. Mm-hmm. So our little kids, and I just love this picture in my mind, these little first and second graders going up and sitting at the piano with their little legs dangling, mm-hmm. and feeling the presence of being on a stage in the theater environment. It's wonderful. This is something that not many little communities can give their children, and we feel real fortunate that we have that opportunity to instill this into our kids, how important it is.
I assume it's always been called the Harrington Opera House ever since it was founded.
Well, actually, it was called the Bank Block.
Yeah.
And then the Harrington Opera House was a part of that.
Oh, I see.
The City Hall is the other part.
Okay. Yeah. And there's something so wonderfully grandiloquent about Harrington Opera House, as if you had an opera company producing Tosca every week or something like that. But has that kind of given a certain, probably between that and I assume the restoring of the building, kind of a specialness to it?
A lot of pride. Yeah. There's a feeling of, even though we're a rural community, and a lot of people think a rural community really isn't interested in the arts, that's not true. We have very talented people in our community, and when they saw the potential of having a performing arts center, everybody stepped up, and there is community pride and ownership, mm-hmm. not only with the adults, but with the children at the school. They feel an ownership with that building. And we feel it stronger and stronger. This last weekend, we had Miss Harrington pageant. And the girls walking across that beautiful stage, they just beamed because it was so special. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just in a gymnasium floor. Mm-hmm. It was a theater. Yeah. And they felt very, very, like I say, it's the ownership. Yeah. They felt a part of it.
How many does it seat?
Legally, we can seat 183. Mm-hmm. Right now, because of our seating, we usually max out at 125, 130. Mm-hmm. If we were to change our seating, then we could approach the 200 mark.
And you spoke of drawing from about 100-mile radius. So are you able to often get a really good crowd there?
Yes, yes. We never know. I was just telling mm-hmm. Kevin, we never know who's going to come. Mm-hmm. We've had as few as 12, and we've had as many as 140. Mm-hmm. So you just never know. We're excited about this performance because it's probably one of the first of that type of a classical that we have to offer. But we're having some very positive feedback. And as an organization, we are presenting this with no charge. We're asking for donations.
Oh, really?
When people
okay.
come. We're hoping that people will come and see the beautiful music that we're offering now, and all varieties. In the past, we've done a lot of the folk and Appalachian music. We have a gospel group coming in. But this is the first one of this caliber, mm-hmm. and we're excited about it.
And how did this come about? Who contacted whom? And
there was a fellow, Steve Whiteside.
Okay,
oh, sure.
And Steve right. Whiteside is a longtime member of the Spokane area. He actually lives in Davenport. Mm-hmm. He plays in the Gonzaga Symphony. He's mm-hmm. a violinist, and he was the archivist for the Spokane Symphony mm-hmm. for a number of years. And I believe he's been very integral in,
yes.
you know, the, fundraising for Harrington. I don't know the extent of it. Maybe you know mm-hmm. a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. As a supporter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he verbally, mm-hmm. he really promotes us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his age prevents him from being too much and being mm-hmm. too active in the fact that he's in Davenport.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been very, very supportive and, like I say, very vocal
mm-hmm.
in passing the word. And that's how we found out about you.
Well, and he had told me for years they have a fundraiser to get money for a piano, mm-hmm. and it's coming. And so finally, you know, he's like, we finally have a piano. And I'm like, hey, I have a great idea. Maybe I could play a recital there.
Yeah.
There you go. And Billy, how long have you lived in Harrington?
Oh, my gosh, we've been there 39 years.
Okay, because it's interesting. We define things by the major highways, and there's Highway 2 to the north. There's I-90, which was, what, originally U.S. 10,
right.
to the south. And so Harrington is not on either of those beaten paths. What are the vices and virtues of that for Harrington?
Well, it's a problem because we're a destination place. You know, you have to know you're coming here, unless mm-hmm. you're going on 28 or going from 2 to the freeway. But we do have a golf course that draws people in.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're finding that the Opera House is bringing people in.
Mm-hmm.
So once they find out who we are and what's there, we're finding more and more people and moving into town. And we also have a gentleman who has the Studebaker Garage, and he brings in people to events. And that's probably one of the biggest events we have, including our fall festival. He brings probably sometimes 40 and 50 cars, classic cars.
Studebakers,
yes.
Wow.
It brings enormous amount
would.
Of people.
That's a unique niche
yeah.
right there. Do you have restaurants and lodging?
No. We're working, well, during the summer we do. The golf course has a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And we are working on getting another restaurant open. And we do have a bed and breakfast. There's the old hotel that they're restoring, but that probably is a few years down the road. But these are all things that, as a community, we're actively supporting. We know we need that infrastructure. And at one time we had it. But like all the little towns around the area, you lose your members because of accessible jobs and whatnot. But now we're finding we're becoming the bedroom community for Spokane. So more and more people are moving out into our area, which makes it more viable for a restaurant to open and be able to stay open.
And the simple directions of how to get to Harrington is to go to Tokyo and go north?
Yes.
And Tokyo, we should mention, is not the one in Japan.
That's right.
But that's 50 miles, essentially 10 miles shy of Ritzville, and where those big agricultural tanks are to the right, and Tokyo
right.
spelled T-O-K-I-O.
Right.
And then there's easy signs to Harrington from there.
Right.
To
or you can go
to
Davenport and head south.
And at Davenport and head south, yeah. and that's mm-hmm. clearly marked too. Are they about the same just
yeah.
as a way to get there? So
yeah, it is,
you can make
yeah.
a round trip of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
What time is the concert?
It's at 7 o'clock.
7
yeah,
o'clock,
7
so you can still get home at
right.
a reasonable hour. So
mm-hmm.
that's at the Harrington Opera House Friday night,
right.
which is this recital. Kevin Hepana, the cellist, and Darian Manica, the pianist, whom we've heard this morning. Thank you a lot for
thank you so much for having us.
Coming yes. in and playing. And good luck with the ongoing saga. We'll want to keep hearing the saga of the Harrington Opera House.
You will.
Sounds
thank you.
Sounds like you should have something like a... a scandal or a something or something to put some mystique on it.
Fortunately, we don't. We do in October there. We're having a, I don't know if it's October or not, but Harrington is the center for the UFO Reporting Center. And the director's there, so we're having another UFO
as in
report.
Unidentified flying object. So if we could, if you could get one of those to land on the roof of the Opera House,
that's right. That's right. That's what people say. But you know, that's one of the largest crowds we get is when he comes and speaks.
Okay, there you go.
So we're very, very
UFOs, Studebakers, and Kevin Heckmatana. What more could anybody ever want in unique? Okay, thanks everybody for coming in.
Thank you.
Very much.